There you are. Ladies and gentlemen, permit me to introduce myself. I am Mr. Matuszek of Matuszek & Company, the shop around the corner. Now, if you'll be kind enough to take a look at the window, you'll see that we sell some very nice things. Of course, my shop may be a little far away for some of you. It's in Budapest, Hungary, just around the corner from Balta Street. But I'm sure that the bargains you get here will more than make your trip worthwhile. It's the kind of a shop where you get a 350 value for 348. And now, with your permission, I would like to introduce you to some of the people who work in my shop. First, I'd like you to get acquainted with my head salesman, Mr. Kralik, played by James Stewart. Yeah, I can buy 24 of these cigarette boxes at Miklos Brothers. What do you think of it?
I think it's great.
Well, open it.
No, Mr. Matuszek, it's not for us.
But you haven't listened to it. It plays Oczyszczonia.
Even if it played Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, I'd still say no. No, I just don't like the idea.
My first sales lady is Clara Novak, played by the very charming Margaret Sullivan. She argues, too.
Listen, I sold as much goods yesterday as anybody else in the shop. 95 Pengo 50 isn't bad for a rainy Monday 3 weeks before Christmas. Did you tell that to Mr. Matuszek?
Yes, I did.
And what did he say?
He said, tell her not to come in that blouse anymore.
Tell him I won't.
I will.
Now, I want you to take a look at Mr. Perovich, played by Felix Bressart. He was one of the Russian comrades in Ninochka. He's the typical sales clerk, who is always 10 minutes early.
Perovich, do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
No, go ahead.
It's very confidential.
Yeah, sure.
Well, suppose a fellow like me wants to get married.
Well, that's wonderful. That's the best thing that could happen to you. Where's the girl?
Oh, wait a minute. What did I say? I said suppose. I said a fellow like me. I didn't say me. Now, look, how much does it cost you to live? You and Mrs. Perovich, leaving out the children.
Oh, why fool yourself?
And now, I have a real treat for you. You are to meet the Beau Brummel of the shop, Mr. Vadash, played by Joseph Schildkraut. Everybody wonders where he gets the money to dress so elegantly. He certainly can't do it on the salary he gets from me. And no shop is complete without an errand boy. Meet Pepe, played by William Tracy.
Mr. Clark, you think I have to work tonight, too? After all, I'm a child.
No, you don't have to stay.
You mean it?
I'll straighten it out with Mr. Matuszek.
Thanks, Mr. Clark.
So now you go to see your girlfriend. By the way, is it serious?
Yes, very.
Maybe. Maybe we'll both be engaged Monday.
I think we will.
I don't want you to misunderstand me. I just said in my case it might happen.
Well, as a matter of fact, I can tell you it will happen.
Oh, I thought you were a customer. I should have known better. However, every disappointment has its bright side. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Ernst Lubitsch, our director. The man who gave you a garbo in Ninochka who made you laugh, and who now gives you a Morgan who makes you laugh.
I hope.
Yes, I hope so too, in the shop around the corner.
Welcome back to the Essential Films Podcast, a podcast devoted to the discussion of the greatest movies ever made, or the essential films. I'm Adolfo Acosta, and I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Mark Espinosa. How are you doing today, Mark?
Pretty good, Adolfo, and a merry belated Christmas to you.
Merry belated Christmas. And all I have to say is, oops, because on our last show, we talked about how, oh, we'll definitely get this in before Christmas. We'll definitely record it in before Christmas. And as of now, it is February 24th when we're recording this, so we did not get it in before Christmas. But that's okay. That's okay. This movie can be watched really any time of year, but we're going to be discussing on today's podcast the shop around the corner. But before we get to that, how have you been doing? How's your... movie watching been lately?
Pretty good. I'm starting to catch up on all the Oscar films like we talked about on Forrest Respected a couple of weeks ago, which, by the way, that show will be up this weekend. And we are going to be recording a follow-up episode to Forrest Respected this weekend as well. We're going to start getting into the Best Picture nominees. And I'm trying to just figure out, like, when I'm going to be able to get to those theater-exclusive ones like Licorice Pizza, Drive My Car. And I think I also want to check out The Worst Person in the World, even though it's not Best Picture. But I keep hearing all these things about it, like we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. And, like, my curiosity is piqued. So, like, is it really that good? Well, it's nominated for screenplay. Let's find out. So I want to try to squeeze that in too. And plus, I do have advanced tickets this Tuesday night for The Batman. So I'm a little excited about that too.
Oh my God, is that already this Tuesday?
Yeah. Well, it's next week, it's Friday.
That stuck up on me, man.
Yeah, but I got the Batman Day ticket for next Tuesday. So that should be fun.
Worst Person in the World, I think, was also nominated for foreign film, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to make sure I watch that. Everyone, every like review I've read has been like glowing about it. I do want to say, I think Drive My Car is going to be on HBO Max at the beginning of March. I think I read that somewhere. So you might be able to get that. Don't quote me on it, but I feel like I remembered reading that somewhere. I don't know about Licorice Pizza, though.
Yeah, that one might be a while still. Oh, I also did read today. I don't know if this is true, but I think we talked about the other episode that the Netflix Marvel shows were leaving Netflix next week, but yep, they are going to show up on Disney Plus, I think, March 16th that it's supposed to show up. So for those who haven't checked it out yet.
They're all R-rated as well, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I don't know if that's true. I just something that I've read through the seen through the grapevines, so I'm going to try to find out probably before we get off the air if that's true. But I saw something that said March 16th, the Netflix Marvel shows will be on Disney Plus. Now, it could be like it's overseas and not America, but I'll so I get some confirmation on that.
Interesting. I don't think I'm trying to think. Oh, you know what? I did watch one of the Oscar-nominated films. I watched Nightmare Alley, which was awesome. Have you seen Nightmare Alley yet?
I want to see it in theaters in the black and white. Like, that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, it is on Hulu and I think HBO Max.
Yes.
But I watched it on Hulu. It is excellent. Absolutely. It's right now, like, my pick of the Oscar nominees. I'm not saying it'll win, but of the Oscar nominees, Best Picture nominees, that's my favorite so far. It's really, really, really good.
That's awesome.
I don't want to give too much away, but it's not I think it was Guillermo del Toro's last movie was it The Shape of Water? Or did he have something in between?
I believe it was Shape of Water.
Okay. So that movie, while it had his kind of signature trademarks and it was like dark, it still had kind of an uplifting ending or message, right? Don't look for that here. That's all I'm gonna say. It is not a happy movie, and if you are a fan of noir, you're gonna love this film. It is so heavily inspired by noir. It's interesting because I remember seeing a trailer for it that, or it was either trailer or TV spot, I can't remember, that kind of marketed it as a horror movie, and it's not a horror movie at all. It's a noir. It's a thriller, maybe, I think you would call it, but it's definitely not a horror movie. But it's really good. It's really freaking good. It's a remake too from a 1940s movie that I want to watch the original. That I think that has a Criterion edition, the original. So I might do a blind buy on that to watch it.
But
Nightmare Alley, highest recommendation from me.
Yeah, starting next week, I really want to start going to like back to the theaters to check out some of these movies. Like, I might even do like something I've never done before because they are bringing back the there's like, for example, Alamo's doing the nominated shorts. Like, they're gonna screen them all in one, so I might actually do that for the first time and actually watch those. But I gotta figure out my schedule and what I want to do. I do know that, and we'll get into this more on FP, but like after the Oscars, I really want to start going like, you know, on my Sundays or like on my days off, I want to go back to going back to the theater regularly. I mean, it's, I think it's time now. I got to get myself out of this funk and I want to go back to some or as close to normal as we can be right now.
Yeah. The world's kind of falling apart right now. So
yeah,
let's talk about something a little more happy. Let's dig into the movie, The Shop Around the Corner. First of all, before we get into the film and kind of the stats, how did you first experience this movie?
I saw You Got Mail first. That's how. it's not a it's not some sort of like, I guess we'll call it romantic, like discovery or just something that I was curious about. No, I saw You Got Mail first. And then I happened to be at home going through the TCM listings for that day for whatever reason. And then I saw that. I was like, wait a minute, The Shop Around the Corner. Isn't that the name of the store in You Got Mail? So I was like, maybe that was a remake. I didn't know it was a remake. I just thought You Got Mail was just You Got Mail, right? And then I saw the title, Shop Around the Corner. Maybe they're connected. Maybe it was a remake of that movie. So I watched it, and of course, lo and behold, it was. And that was the first time I watched it. Like, nothing special about it. It was just one of those, like, oh, cool. I guess this is the remake. Or I guess You Got Mail was the remake of this. So I better check it out. And I did, and rest is history there.
Yeah, we're going to touch a little bit on the You've Got Mail remake and a little bit later, and some other adaptations that came out of this. There's nothing real romantic or special about the way I first discovered it. It's just one of those movies is like, oh, I've heard of this movie, and I, you know, put it on my Netflix queue, and I watched it. And ever since I watched it, it's been kind of a holiday staple every year since then for me, because it's very good. Even though like only like the last, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes actually takes place at Christmas.
Right.
It is a very, you know, it's a very good Christmas film in the sense that it has the positive message and the heartwarming feelings and all that stuff.
Yeah, I do want to add, though, for this most recent screening that I did for the show, I actually found an old TCM airing on the interwebs. Like, I was just looking for a place to stream it. I'm sure, as we'll get into at the end of the show, there's really no place you can stream it for free. You have to pay the $2.99 or whatever, which I was prepared to do until I saw on Vimeo, it had like the, you said Shop Around the Corner, and then it had like the running time was an hour 41. I'm like, am I gonna have to pay for this? But so I just clicked it just to be curious, and then it started playing, and then the description said this is the TCM airing, I think from 1997. And it was so cool because it was Robert Osborne, you know, doing the intro and everything,
the
and
legend.
He talked about it, the legend Robert Osborne. And then at the end of the movie, like, he did like the wrap up, and he was like, you know, talking about good old summertime, which we'll get into that when we talk about like the remakes and all that. And then he says, and there's currently a remake in production right now starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan with a director directed by Nora Ephron. So I guess that's something we could be looking forward to, I guess. So I thought that was funny. Like, he was a little like pessimistic, I guess, about how You Got Mail would turn out.
Yeah. And it's so funny how dated that movie, just the title of that movie is, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's awesome that you get to watch it that way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So let's get into the stats here. It was produced and directed by Ernst Lubitsch. It stars Margaret Sullavan, James Stewart, Frank Morgan, Joseph Schildkraut, and William Tracy. The screenplay was written by Sam Rafelson, and it was based on a Hungarian play called Parfumerie by Miklos Laszlo. I think I got that right. So one of the things I wanted to kind of get into some of the background is that Ernst Lubitsch actually bought the rights to this play like in like 1938 or something like that. And he really wanted to film it. And he didn't get a chance until 1939 when he signed with a contract with MGM, and he like sold him MGM the rights to the movie so long as he got to direct it. So that's how it kind of came into the fold with MGM.
Right.
He also wanted to make sure that Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan were his two leads, and they weren't available at the time he wanted to film. So he filmed the movie Ninotchka, which is another, you know, classic film from the 1930, from like the year of 1939, which was one of the greatest years in film history. And then after he was done with Ninotchka, he got Stewart and Sullivan, and they were able to make Shop Around the Corner.
Now, something that Robert Osborne said in the intro, I thought that was funny, was that, you know, Sullivan and Stewart basically loved working with each other. Like, they were like best friends, and they were kind of, in a way, like, I see implied that they were meant for each other romantically. It's just it never worked out that way. Like, Stewart would say, oh, you know, she's marrying all my friends, and she never married me. So I just think that was like a little funny, like, side note for that, because you could tell, like, especially in this movie, like, just the chemistry they have with each other, you could tell, like, even off screen, like, they're like best friends.
Yeah, I've actually got a lot of notes on that. We can may as well get into it now. One of his friends that she married was Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda.
Yeah. It was his best friend in real life. That was, I think, her second husband. She had a lot of husbands. but I think that Henry Fonda may have been her second husband. And that's how they had met. And she was actually the one that had I was going to say she recommended him for Shop Around the Corner, but that's not true. She was in a movie called Next Time We Love in 1936.
Right.
And they were looking for a lead, and she recommended Jimmy Stewart based on, you know, their friendship. Right. But Jimmy Stewart was actually not super polished at that time, so much so that the director, Edward H. Griffith, basically was like bullied him on the set and told Margaret Sullivan that, quote, he's wet behind the ears and he's going to make a mess of things. So Sullivan basically coached him during that entire production and kind of started. So the whole, you know, his whole mannerisms, how he's kind of awkward, and he has like that speech pattern where he kind of stumbles a little bit. Like, that's all Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
And apparently in real life, it's much more pronounced. And she kind of helped him, like, you know, tone it down. Right. And then finally, whenever she kind of had him a little more polished, the director saw that they actually have great on-screen chemistry. And that ended up leading them to make three more movies together. The Shopworn Angel, The Shop Around the Corner, and The Mortal Storm.
Yeah, I read about The Mortal Storm, and it looks like a very interesting interesting movie. So I'm going to try to track that down just to watch on my own, because just having the two of them in it is one thing, but then, like, just reading about what the story is, it's like, seems interesting for the times we're living in, so I better check this out.
Yeah, I have a copy of it that I haven't watched yet, and I'll get to it someday. But yeah. I've heard things about it. So yeah, their on-screen chemistry is really good. It's really evident here in this film, and it also sparked a lot of rumors, especially that started basically on this movie called Next Time We Love, because whenever she was coaching him, they'd basically go off into like her private trailer like for hours and do the coaching, which obviously is going to start a lot of rumors. And
right.
They're constant working together with each other, and then they're like hanging out outside of movie sets, like in their, you know, personal time, did lead to a lot of rumors about a romantic situation. That said, in like later biographies of both Sullivan and Stewart, she only ever regarded him as a friend and a coworker, and she denied any sort of romantic relationship. But she was aware that he had a crush on her, and he had a crush on her for years until he got married. But he never acted on it because she was always married.
Right.
So, kind of like you said, she's always marrying my friends.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that was, but yeah, so as much as they had on-screen chemistry, it was because they had a real life chemistry with each other, even though they didn't have a romantic relationship. Although that did not stop the rumor mill from going.
Of course.
So let's get into kind of the meat and potatoes of it. So the story is about Alfred Kralik, played by Jimmy Stewart. He's the best salesman at like a, I don't know what kind of shop you call that. It's like a, it sells like suitcases and music boxes and like trinkets and things like that. Like, I don't know what you would call that kind of store, but it's like a shop, like a boutique or something like that.
Right.
And the film takes place in Budapest. I don't really have a real reason for that, other than that the play it's based on was based in Hungary, was from Hungary. I don't know why they didn't, like, you know, translate it over to like an American shop. Doesn't matter, but I was just, it's just interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
And it's a shop that's owned by Mr. Matichek, which you're never going to forget that name because they say it like 150 times in this film. Played by Frank Morgan, who I think we last saw on this podcast as the Wizard of Oz in The Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
And he's one of those guys that, like, and it, I don't know if he had this problem like when he was a contemporary in the 30s and 40s, but because the first time I saw him was in The Wizard of Oz, like, to me, anytime he appears on screen, I'm like, oh, it's the wizard. You know what I mean? Like, I can't get that out of my head, because that is what he's attached to. And he's done, if you look at his IMDb, he's done, like, you know, so many films. He's got a huge resume. But for me, he's the wizard. And I wonder, like, if other people had that or if it's just me. Because to me, I can't, every time I see him, I can't, like, unsee that.
No, I kind of had a similar problem. Like, when I first saw him, because I didn't see the credits. I didn't see it was Frank Morgan. So, you know, I'm looking at him, like, I know him from somewhere. And then at first, I think it's Burgess Meredith, right? But it's like, no, that can't be Burgess Meredith. So I look again, and then it's like, wait a minute, is he the Wizard of Oz? So then at the end of the movie, when they roll the credits again, I see Frank Morgan, oh, it was the Wizard. But it's like, at first, I thought he was Burgess Meredith for a minute. But like, no, that's the Wizard.
Yeah, it's so weird. Just, it's a weird thing to see. And you want to know an interesting tidbit about Frank Morgan? He has a twin brother. And if you look up pictures of him, he looks like, they really do look exactly the same.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't wonder, I haven't actually done any research on it, but I do wonder if, like, they ever used that to their advantage in, like, any sort of doubles in a movie or something like that.
Yeah, possible.
So the shop is filled with, you know, a variety of different characters. I'm not going to list all of them. I'm just going to kind of mention the key ones. You have Perovich, who's played by Felix Brassard. This is like an older man. He's Kralik's friend. He's kind of like his confidant. You have Vadish, who's played by the Academy Award winner, Joseph Schildkraut. And he won the Academy Award for, I think, The Life of Emile Zola. And he is like he's a weasel. Like, he's always kissing up, and he's always kind of showing off and bragging. Like, he's a weasel. And then the other kind of important coworker, I would say, is Pepe, who is like the delivery boy. And he's played by William Tracy, and to me, I think he steals the show every time he's on screen, because he's got the best lines in the movie. Those are pretty much, and there's other characters, but they don't really provide a lot for the story. So I'm just gonna not bother mentioning them.
Yeah.
So one morning, so Kralik is talking to Perovich, and he's talking about how he's been doing kind of like a pen pal relationship with an anonymous woman. And he's like reading these, you know, beautiful love letters that they're writing to each other. And Perovich is kind of egging him on, wondering if it's going to go anywhere. And he's just like, I don't know, but I'm falling in love with this woman's mind, things like that. Shortly afterwards, a young lady walks into the shop and is looking for work. And this young lady is, of course, Clara, played by Margaret Sullivan. And kind of right off the bat, they have like a, they start having a kind of nice relationship with him as like the salesperson, and he thinking that she's like a client, like a customer. And then after he realizes that she's just there looking for a job, they all like immediately start kind of sniping at each other. And it's something that will last throughout the rest of the film.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell like this is going to be, I guess, part of the theme. Of course, at this point, you have no idea that, you know, Clara and Alfred are the ones that are writing to each other. Like, it's like you're going to find that out soon enough. But it's like, you know, immediately here, you kind of see that, oh, you know, he thinks he's the customer. He's, you know, trying to sell all these purses. Like, oh, you know, what are you looking for? Like, how can I help you with? Or do you want to just look around, you know, make yourself at home? And then as soon as she says, oh, no, I'm looking for work. And then he kind of just has like this attitude towards her, like, no, we don't need any help. He's like, and you can't see Mr. Madrigal. You know, it's like it's just really funny how like just immediately he just has that like 180 degree turn in attitude. It's something that's going to stay constant throughout.
Right. And Mr. Banachek, he comes over like whenever because he says, I guarantee you it's impossible that anyone's going to hire. And if Mr. Banachek were here, he'd tell you the same thing. Of course, Mr. Banachek overhears this. And she's like, oh, young lady, I assure you, nothing is impossible. And then when she asks him for a job, he goes like, oh, no, impossible. Can't work.
So he was right.
And then, and it leads to like a running gag. So he has these music boxes that are, I think they're cigarette boxes, which is something people used to have, a box to keep their cigarettes in. But every time you opened it, it played Ochichonia, you know, very delightful little classical musical piece, right?
Yeah.
And immediately whenever Kralik sees this, he's like, no, this is a terrible idea. Every time someone opens it, they're going to hear this stupid song. This is a bad idea. So, but Clara gets on Mr. Manchik's good side by selling one to an old lady at like a really marked up price, higher than Matichik actually paid for it. And yeah, of course that lands her a job.
Actually higher than even he wanted to sell. I think he wanted to sell for like $5.29 or something, and she sold it for like $6. So just off of that alone, like, yeah, you're higher.
Six penga, which I think is a fun little monetary unit. Like, it's better than dollar. Penga. We should use that penguin.
Or the ruble.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't get along, right? And you can see this as, you know, time skips forward. And after she's been working there for a while, you see that they're always, just always sniping at each other. They're always arguing with each other. And what I think is interesting is, going back to their on-screen chemistry, Sullivan apparently always was like kind of famous for her like bad temper.
Yeah.
And and just kind of complete disregard for like the whole Hollywood system. But she did like Jimmy Stewart. But even then, even with Jimmy Stewart, even with someone she liked, she would still kind of get, you know, people could still get on her nerves. For example, apparently the scene and we'll get to the scene a little later, but in the scene where he meets her at the cafe, and he talks about, you know, pulling up his trousers so that she sees that he's not bow-legged. Apparently it took 48 takes because he just kept getting it wrong, and it really, really angered her. She said, let's see here. Jimmy Stewart says, we were in this little restaurant, and I had the line, I will come out on the street and I'll roll my trousers up to my knees. For some reason, I couldn't say it. She was furious. She said, this is absolutely ridiculous. There I was standing with my trousers rolled up to my knees, very conscious of my skinny legs. And I said, I don't want to act today. Get a fellow with decent legs just to show them. Margaret said, then I absolutely refused to do the picture. So we did more takes. Unquote.
You know, it's funny. Like, again, I'm getting ahead of myself, but in the scene in the end when he actually does pull up his trousers, it doesn't look like his legs, but apparently, I guess they are. But it looked like it was – those legs did look like they belonged to Jimmy Stewart. But and just the way, like, the editing, like, it kind of cut to the legs and then kind of cut back to her, like, looking down. Like, it looked off, like it was, like, inserted, you know. But I guess it was his legs after all.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of an example of like the relationship they had off screen. And, you know, we're talking about the chemistry that the two had with each other. And it kind of brings me to a point. Have you ever noticed, like, when people talk about what good chemistry two actors have, a lot of it also has to do with the fact that the two characters are always like arguing or fighting with each other, in addition to being like romantic and passionate. Like, why is that? You know what I mean? Like, why is that a thing?
I mean, I wish I had an answer for you that I don't know. I guess it's just, you know, just not knowing anything about their history off screen. I don't know. It's just something about just when you see two people on screen, like just arguing. And again, like at this point, you don't know that they're the ones writing to each other. You just see, you know, the way that they're talking back to each other and the kind of like the insults they throw at each other and just the attitude. I don't know what it is, but it's like there's something just captivating about that. I guess because at least here it seems like it's so, I don't know, it just feels fancy. I don't know. I can't think of a better word to describe it. It just feels like, you know, you're watching something is just so captivating, even though it's just somebody, you know, arguing about, oh, I can't stay late today because I have an engagement. Well, what do you mean? I have an engagement too. And it's just, it's just simple banter, but it's like the way that the actors deliver the line to perform it, it just makes it that much more captivating that you can't wait to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And the writing is really good here because the way she insults him, because he rarely insults her back,
right?
But like he fights with her, but doesn't necessarily go after her. She goes after him all the time. And there's one exchange where I think they're in the back, like messing around with suitcases or something. And she just goes on this tirade of like why he's awful. And then at the very end, right before she leaves, she goes, "Mr. Kralik, I don't like you." And then she walks up. Yeah. And it was a really good delivery. It just cracks me up every time I hear it. Because it's just like after all that like verbal assault, she just ends it with a very simple, "I don't like you."
I don't like you. Away. And they just walks away. Yeah.
But yeah, they're all, you know, it's Christmas time now and they're always fighting with each other. Mr. Manichek has now kind of distanced himself a little bit from Kralik. He used to be his favorite employee, but like more and more, like he's been a little more distant and cold to him. And at the same time, we kind of find out that he is, he thinks that his wife, who was kind of mentioned earlier on in the film, she's never seen, but is mentioned, is having an affair with somebody at his store, and he suspects it's Kralik. Kralik has no idea that he suspects him, and obviously it's not true that he's having an affair. But he doesn't know why Mr. Manichek is always angry with him, and he wants to, you know, ask him for a raise, but he feels really hesitant to do so because of this.
And I kind of like how this is set up too, because at the beginning of the film, when like your first meeting, they're introducing the characters, they're waiting outside the store for Mr. Manichek to show up, and then you know, Kralik shows up, and then who was the guy? What's his face? Perovich, right? Mm-hmm. So he's saying, "Oh, I heard, you know, you had dinner with Mr. Manichek and his wife at his house, you know, so how was it?" So they're setting up that, you know, okay, Kralik obviously is, you know, the favored employee. You know, he's been there the longest, you know, and then like he says near the end, like, you know, Mr. Manichek kind of sees Kralik as like a son in a way. So it's like, okay, you know, he's always going to his house. And I guess just because based on that relationship, I guess it was easy for Mr. Manichek to just assume, oh, I got this letter saying that my wife's having an affair with an employee. It has to be Kralik, because who else would she know like that? Who else, what other one of my employees would have, you know, the contact with my wife that Kralik does? So I guess it was natural for him to just assume, but still, like, you know, when you assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. So I don't know why he did that. So, and then, yeah, and then just things get really awkward.
Yeah, it just gets super awkward. He's always in a bad mood. It's Christmas time, and he wants all the employees to stay, you know, late after the store closes to decorate the store for Christmas, basically. And Kralik and Clara both have an engagement that evening, which is basically a date with each other that each other doesn't know about.
Yeah.
And they really want to get off early. So Clara actually gets off early for the night when she asks Matichek, and then whenever, you know, Kralik tries to get off early, he gets an earful from Matichek, and then shortly thereafter, whenever Kralik confronts him about it, he gets fired.
Yeah, he gives him his severance letter recommendation, and that's it. And it's just, this is a great scene because it not only shows like just how much that relationship has deteriorated, and we still don't know why. Like, it's just kind of bugging me at this point. Like, why did you fire him? Like, just like the rest of the characters, the rest of the employees, like, why would you fire Kralik? You know, he's just, you know, he's your best employee. He's been here the longest. Why would you do this? Like, I'm wondering that too. Like, watching this for the first time, like, why would you? It doesn't make any sense. And then just that scene, like, where he's walking out the office so dejected. He has the letter in his hand. He has his severance in the other hand. And it's just, you know, everybody's just like, why did this happen? And, you know, you can tell even though, like, that that weasel, I forget what his name is, but, like, you can tell, like, Vadish. Vadish?
Yeah, I think it's Vadish.
Vadish. Like, you know, even though he's, like, saying, you know, good luck to you, you know, wherever you end up, but you could tell, like, he's smiling. Because you could tell, like, he was, like, he never liked him anyway. And as we're going to find out later, there was a reason that Kralik didn't like him back either.
Right. And in that scene where he's kind of saying goodbye to everyone, you know, you see how much everyone likes him. And even Clara is, like, you know, remorseful. So it's, like, the first sign you get, like, she doesn't hate him that much, but, like, she's a little remorseful in that one moment.
Yeah.
So after everyone leaves for the night, a private investigator comes to the office, and he's like, hey, you were right. It's one of your employees. It's actually Vadish. And then now Matichek is like, oh, my God, I was wrong all along. And he goes off to, like, his office and basically tries to kill himself. But Pepe, the delivery boy, kind of comes in right at that moment and stops him from doing it. Now, this is kind of interesting because the whole movie is more or less a pretty light movie. Like, it's a fun, heartwarming movie. And then all of a sudden, there's a suicide attempt, like, right in the middle of it. It's like, whoa. It's kind of like If It's a Wonderful Life where like, hey, there's a big suicide attempt, like, in the movie that's supposed to be this heartwarming family movie.
Yeah, it kind of caught me off guard, too, with this last... because, again, I hadn't seen this movie, like, in years. So this was the first time I was watching it in a while. And I couldn't remember half of it at this point. So it was like I was watching it for the first time in a way. And, you know, when that scene happens, when Pepe walks in, like, Mr. Banachek, no! And then you hear the gunshot. I'm like, holy crap. It's like this... It feels... I mean... with the story they're telling, I guess it makes sense, but just in this type of movie and this atmosphere they were kind of already building, this feels kind of out of place for something like this.
It does a little bit. And maybe that's just left over from the play and it's adapted into the play, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it does seem kind of like a, where did this come from all of a sudden?
Exactly.
Not to make light of suicide, but, you know, after the investigator tells him that, like, he's like, okay, just send me a bill and I'll take care of it. But then he goes off to commit suicide. You're not going to take care of that bill, buddy.
Right.
And now that you know it's not Kralik, like, you're going to let him, like, he's going to be off their fire. You should, like, make amends with him before, like, you off yourself. Anyway. Right.
That'd be the polite thing to do.
I know, right? And that private investigator is going to get stiff for the bill. So, in the meantime, Kralik goes to, like, the cafe to meet up with... Well, he doesn't go to there to meet up with his pen pal. He, like, just kind of... He's thinking about it, but he feels so dejected after getting fired. He was not sure. And Pirovich is there with him, and he's, like, asking Pirovich, look, she's supposed to have, like, a rose or a carnation. It's a carnation, I think. A carnation, and she's going to be reading Anna Karenina. And so Pirovich looks in there, and he's like, oh, yeah, I see her. She kind of looks like... Miss Novak, let me see. I have the quote right here. He's like, well, this is a fine time to talk about Miss Novak. Well, if you don't like Miss Novak, I can tell you right now, you won't like that girl. Why? Because it is Miss Novak.
So basically, you're saying that Pirovich is Dave Chappelle here.
Oh, is that how? See, I don't remember his part in that movie.
If you don't like Kathleen Kelly, you're not going to like this one. Why not? Because it is Kathleen Kelly.
Yeah, see, I've seen You've Got Mail, but I do not remember it at all. I forgot until just now that you said that Dave Chappelle was in that movie.
Yeah. It's the exact, literally, like, not word for word, but it's like the whole, that whole atmosphere, that whole scene outside the diner, the cafe, and You Got Mail. It's the same exact scene. It's pretty funny.
So now he has this knowledge. He's like, it's kind of like he's starting to see her in a new light now that he has this knowledge. So he goes into the cafe, he finds a table next to her, and he starts trying to strike up a conversation with her. But she, like, is, like, really concerned that her man, that she doesn't know is him, is going to see her talking to him and, like, be offended or get jealous or something and ruin her chances and ruin her date. So because of that, they start fighting with each other all over again. And even though she was sorry about him getting fired before, now she's just like, no, I don't care. Get out of here. Like, you're ruining everything.
And you know what? This is a great scene just to see the type of chemistry they have, even though they're basically, like, you know, Clara's hurling insults at him again. But it's like she's getting really nasty with the insults here. At one point, it's like, okay, fine, be by yourself. Just get out of here. Because it's like at first I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, you know, you're kind of being a dick, Kralik, because you're just going to, like, just because it's Clara, you're not going to, you know, go up to her or anything. You're just going to leave her. But then he ends up coming in anyway. And he tries to talk to her, and he's just being all rude. Oh, you know, the guy I'm meeting is smarter than you. You're just a lowly clerk, you know.
A little insignificant clerk.
Right? And at that point, he's like, well, you know what? Fine. Have a good night. Have fun getting stiffed. You know, it's like, come on.
I really love this scene. I think it's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Because it's such a good comedic sequence, because obviously you have one party that knows something that the other party doesn't, and they're trying to have a conversation with one of them having that knowledge. And it just leads to really good, like, a really good exchange, especially because she's being so mean to the person that she doesn't know is really the person behind those letters. Right. And he's trying to, like, reconcile, like, the person that wrote those letters is this annoying coworker that I've been dealing with for like 6 months. How could she possibly be the same person? And he's like trying to, like, get something out of her, but, like, she just is so mean to him. And it's just funny, like, one person's trying to, like, see past that just to see if that person is there, and the other one is completely oblivious to that is the same person.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's where the scene, like, gets its strength from. It's just from that, like, situation. It's just, it makes for, you know, a great entertaining scene. And just, again, the two actors there just knock it out of the park.
And then we also get a scene at the hospital where Mr. Banachek is kind of recovering from a nervous breakdown. Pepe is there talking to the doctor, and he's like, would you say that's more expensive than a nervous breakdown? And he's like, what are you? And he's like, well, I'm a contact man between the customers and the store. You're a delivery boy? Well, do I call you a pill pusher?
That's a great line.
It's a great line. It's funny how, like, in the 40s, I guess, like, if you try to commit suicide, you just get sent to the hospital to, like, just hang out. You
know what I mean? Apparently.
Like, they say you have, like, a nervous breakdown. I don't know what you would call that in, like, modern times, like an anxiety attack or a depressive episode. I don't know. But basically, he's in the hospital and recovering from this. And he calls in Kralik and tells him, hey, he tells him what happened. And then he's like, look, I should never have fired you. I want to bring you back now as the manager of the store. And you can, you know, hire and fire and do whatever you want, but you're going to be the manager from now on. And then he promotes Pepe up to a clerk. And there's a great scene where after Pepe comes in, he's all, like, dressed up in, like, a suit and tie, and he picks up the phone and he's like, He's like, "Halo, delivery service? I need a good boy. No bad manners. Send a few over. I'll take a look them over." And then he calls Mrs. Matacek and basically insults her over the phone. Yeah. And then he looks to his coworkers and goes, "Draw your own conclusions."
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, you're saying that I forgot to get you that perfume? Well, guess what? You're never getting that perfume now. Why don't you ask your friend Vada to get it for you?" And then he looks around, "Draw your own conclusions," and he just walks away like a badass.
And another thing, I love that, like, someone asks, someone's like, "Did they make you, who made you a clerk?" And Pervich goes, "Yes. Who did this terrible thing?"
That's another great line.
So obviously, Kralik is welcomed back with his employees with open arms, including Vadash, who immediately starts sucking up to him, like at the first line he gets. Then we have a sequence where Miss Novak is, or Clara, like, goes to the mailbox to check for her daily letter, her weekly letter. I don't know how often this, and it wasn't there. She gets so depressed and sad that she calls in sick.
That's a great shot, by the way, not to cut you off, but just that, like, 10 to 15 second, you know, scene of her, just her hand just reaching in the mailbox and it's empty, and just seeing, like, that part of her face that she's just so disappointed and sad. That might be my favorite shot of the whole movie. What you get just out of those 10 seconds is just amazing. Really well done.
I was just going to mention that her acting in those 10 seconds, like you said, is just exquisite. Like, you can see the disappointment and not just disappointment, but like the devastation on her face. And I have a quote here from David Thompson, who's a film historian. And he says, "The shot of Sullivan's gloved hand and then her ruined face searching an empty mailbox for a letter is one of the most fragile moments in film. For an instant, the ravishing Sullivan looks old and ill, touched by loss." That's a good description. She just looks completely devastated. And later on that night, she tries to go visit Mr. Matacek at the store. She doesn't know that everything that's happened, that Kralik is now manager. And she finds out that he's the manager, and she just faints. It's one of those things that, like, I love classic movies with all my heart, dude. I love them. It's my favorite period in Hollywood. It's like the classic Hollywood era. But my biggest complaint from that era is women be fainting. Why are women always fainting? Like, this doesn't happen in real life.
It doesn't.
Women faint for any reason. Like, they got bad news, faint. They cut their finger, faint. They get a little too angry, faint. Like, they faint for no reason. And it's just one of those things. It's like, why do they always do that? Why weren't, like, actresses, like, speaking up, like, "No, nobody does this. Nobody faints. What are you doing? We're not doing this." Anyway, she faints, and Kralik visits her at home, where he produces a letter. I forget the excuse he says, but he basically gives her a letter from her mystery person, and basically, I love that in the letter he says, "Who is this attractive man that you were with?"
Of course.
And basically, she gets the impression, like, "Oh, it's exactly what happened. He saw me with you. He made his own conclusions, and I should be very angry with you." So it's funny because in this scene, they have a little bit of – he's very, like, nice to her. Fighting back with her. He just kind of, like, accepts it and goes, "Oh, okay, all right. Well, that's your right to see it that way."
Yeah.
But basically, she says that he's she's gonna be back at work soon, and she's super excited about her prospects now. Now, one thing I forgot to mention is that Kralik ends up firing Vadash, and in a great kind of sequence, like. He tells him, like, "I just don't like you." He doesn't say why he's firing him. He's just like, "I just don't like you." And he's like, "I'm entitled to a recommendation letter." And Kralik is like, to whom am I concerned? Mr. Vodich has been in the employ of Magic and Company for the last 2 years, during which he's been very efficient as a stool pigeon, a troublemaker, and a rat.
No. What I liked about that whole thing was first, like, when he tries to already automatically like kiss up to him, he gives him I think this is something that Steve Carell as Donald Rumsfeld said in Vice, where Kralik gives him a fuck off assignment, where he basically says, you know, you're gonna take the black suitcases that are up, you're gonna bring them down. You're gonna take the brown suitcases that are down, you're gonna put them up. It's basically that's one of those like get out of my way assignments, just to get, you know, so you don't have to look at them. I've been guilty of giving those assignments at work too, so I know exactly. As soon as he started saying what he had to do, I knew what it was. And then to top it off, you know, when they have that kind of confrontation in the office, he's like, you know, I like you. Like, well, I don't like you. Just the way, in classic Jimmy Stewart form, well, I don't like you.
and he, Vodich is actually a great response. He goes, well, that's your privilege. I'm like, I don't know. It's a great line. What's funny then is that after he's like throwing him out, he pushes him really hard and he like falls into like a big display of those stupid music boxes and they all tumble everywhere and everyone starts running towards him. And there's a good bit of physical comedy here that is very subtle, but I laugh every time I see it. All the other coworkers run to where he just got pushed, and he like gets up and like puts his arms out as if, oh, they're coming to help me up, but they're not. They're all going to pick up the music boxes. Yeah. And he gets this look of like, son of a bitch on his face. And then Pepe brings his coat and he like puts his arms out to get his coat and then he just drops him on the floor.
He just drops it, yeah.
It's a great sequence. Trying to figure out where else we... So... Basically, we fast forward. I think it's Christmas Eve. Yeah. We're seeing that like Madigan Company is like doing gangbusters that evening. It's a Christmas miracle. They're selling everything out in the store. Mr. Madigan kind of comes in to like sneak a peek at what's going on. And he tries to like play innocent. And he's like, oh, excuse me, ladies. How much is that suitcase in the window? And he's like, my, what deals you get here at Madigan Company? I wonder how he does it. And they're like, well, if you don't know Mr. Magic, then who was? That's great. He tried to be a card.
That popped me when that happened. That was good. That's a good little joke. Before you go on, we got to also mention this. How in the scene prior when Kralik was visiting Miss Novak at her house and brought her the letter, you know, she was saying, you know, she was happy that, you know, she got a letter back and that there was a quote-unquote misunderstanding. And she goes, oh, you know, I'm going to get him a Christmas present. I want to get him the cigarette box. And he goes, oh, no, I don't think he'd like that. You know, what about one of those pigskin wallets we just got in? You know, I'm sure he'd like that. Oh, no, I think the music box is going to... And he's trying to convince her, don't get me the music box. Get me the wallet. And it's fine. And then he gets a Perovich to even step in. He's like, oh, you know what? You know, oh, I think the wallet would be a much nicer gift. And then they have like this whole exchange. Oh, you know, I'll think about changing it. He goes into the office. You're getting the wallet.
Before that, he's like, oh, we only have one of those left. I'm wondering if I could have it for a Christmas gift. She's like, oh, isn't there something else you could get your uncle? Or I think it's his uncle or his wife's uncle or something like that. And he goes, not really. See, I really hate my uncle. I want to get him something that'll annoy him. That's good stuff. So after the shops close on Christmas Eve, we see that they've done like the best day in like the history of the shop. And, you know, Mr. Magic gives out like, you know, bonuses to Christmas bonuses to everybody. And then as everyone's leaving, he's like, it's actually kind of sad and sweet at the same time. He's like, he's finding out like everyone's plans for Christmas. He's like, oh, so what are you doing? And he's like, and everyone always has some different kind of plans. He goes to Pepe and he's like, oh, you're going to go home to your mom and dad, right? And he's like, not quite. You see that girl over there? I'm her Santa Claus. And then he finally gets to the new delivery boy, Rudy. And he like lists all these things. He like I forget, like roast goose and apple dumplings and both. And he's like, oh, Mr. Matichek.
I don't know, like, man. Well, Rudy 17. This felt a little weird, if I'm going to be honest. <with you. laughs>
Don't take it there, man. But
an old man enticing a 17-year-old to come with him out of nowhere and have dinner.
Had some roast goose.
With and a turkey with apples stuffed in. Ooh, that sounds pretty good, actually.
So yeah, Rudy goes off with him and has, like, you know, Christmas dinner. So Mr. Magic isn't alone on Christmas. Interesting bit of trivia: the actor who played Rudy. I'm gonna get his name here in just a second. His name is Charles Smith. Had an uncredited role in a singing quartet in the movie In the Good Old Summertime.
Oh, the remake.
Yeah.
The first remake.
So Kralik and Clara are like the last people in the shop closing down. And, you know, Clara basically says, I think I'm going to get proposed to tonight. And Kralik says, I think you will too. And he basically goes on this and talks about, yeah, he came to see me. He's old and he's fat. And he's just painting this picture of this awful dude. He's unemployed. And she, like, just is devastated by all of this. Kralik basically goes, he reveals that, you know, that wasn't true at all. And that he would, actually she reveals to him that she actually had a crush on him the whole time.
Right.
But she just never felt like she was, like, what's the word I'm looking for? She never felt appropriate in, like, you know, admitting it to him. And he can, now that he likes her, and they're like, oh, well, we could have done something about it. But, and then basically he reveals that he's the one in box 237, I think it is.
Yep, that's
no, that's room 237. 237? I can't remember. I think it's box 237, but I might be thinking of The Shining. I'm not sure. No, it is box 237. I'm right.
Box 237. Yep.
He reveals that it's, you know, take me out of your envelope at box 237 and read me. And she realizes, she goes, you? And then, of course, they realize who they are and they kiss and happily ever after.
No, not quite. Not quite. Before they even kiss, she makes him pull up his pants to make sure he's not bow-legged,
right.
Then they kiss, which still, that's kind of mean. But
yeah.
So what if he was bow-legged? She would have just dumped him?
Yeah, I know, right? And I didn't actually know what bow-legged meant. I had to, like, look it up after the first time I saw this movie. I was like, what the heck is bow-legged? But now I know. So an interesting tidbit about this film is that all the scenes were filmed in order. Like, they didn't jump around. Which is interesting, which is, I think it kind of makes sense because there's really, I think, only two sets. There's the shop and then there's the Clara's room, right?
And the cafe.
Oh, yeah, the cafe. So, I mean, it'd be really easy to shoot that chronologically because you can, it would be like filming a stage play, really.
Right.
If you only have three locations, you just, you know, you can do the whole thing chronologically. That makes sense. But it's a rare thing when that happens, and I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to talk about how I think this is, like, what a romantic comedy should be. Like, romantic comedies, like, guys, you know, typically don't like romantic comedies, and romantic comedies are typically, like, a chick thing, right? Chick flicks. But this is what they should be, right? Like, there should be something like this. And I feel like romantic comedies, I only like them when they're in black and white and from the 30s and 40s, because anything that's, like, in the last 20 or 30 years are always, like, contrived and terrible. But this is, I feel like, what a real romantic comedy is.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's not just about, you know, the story. It's about, you know, the actors and the chemistry they give off. It's the writing. There's a lot of great dialogue here. And it's, you know, when you have, like, the perfect mix of everything, yeah, you're going to create some magic and you're going to have a really good story. You're going to have a really good experience watching the movie. And yeah, I mean, this is pretty much the essence of what, not just romantic comedy, I think all movies, you know, when you have the perfect mix of what you're looking for, you know, you're going to create magic either way. But specifically romantic comedies, I think it comes down to the two leads. If you don't believe that they could be together, or, you're not rooting for them in some form, then it's not going to work. But luckily with these two, James Stewart, Margaret Sullivan, like, it was easy to just get behind them, you know, from the get-go.
Right. So Ernst Lubitsch said that at the time he was quoted as saying that, whenever they made the film, he said, it's not a big picture, just a quiet little story that seemed to have some charm. It didn't cost very much, and it was made in 28 days. I hope it has some charm. And then later, upon reflection in his biography, he wrote that The Shop Around the Corner is the best picture I ever made in my life.
Oh, cool.
Which is interesting. Yeah. And also interesting, they made it only 28 days, so it only took a month to shoot. And what I find kind of fascinating is, just to show you how quickly things were made back in the day, first of all, it was released in January. It was released January 12th, which, it's a Christmas movie. Why would you release it January 12th?
Yeah.
But what's even more interesting is that it was shot from early November to early December 1939. So it was shot in a month, and then a month after it was shot, it was released. Like, that's really fast.
That's a really quick turnaround, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how – I'd have to look at other movies from that era to see how quickly they turn things around, but I feel like that's a huge – that's a really quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at its legacy. It is currently sitting at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, so everyone – every critic from the era and modern era all love this film. One quote I want to give from Pauline Kael, who's – one of the most notoriously difficult to please film critics of her time. Yeah. She said that she considered it as close to perfection as a movie made by mortals as ever likely to be.
Look at that.
He
wasn't even that nice to Citizen Kane.
Yeah, I know. So let's talk about the remake. So this film was remade in 1949 as In the Good Old Summertime, with the Christmas element taken out. And it stars Judy Garland in the Margaret Sullivan role and Van Johnson in the Jimmy Stewart role. I've seen it. It's a musical. It's fun. It's not as good, though. Like, it's a good movie, but it's not as good. There was also some stage adaptations, where they adapted both the play and the movie. Right. And one of them is one that it premiered in 1963 on Broadway called She Loves Me. It was not a very big hit, and it closed quickly. It was revived in 93 and then revived, I thought this was interesting, in 2016 with Zachary Levy and Jane Krakowski, which I think is an interesting combination.
That is. Yeah. I didn't even know that. Cool.
In the 60s, MGM planned to remake the film again as She Loves Me, based on the musical adaptation She Loves Me, reuniting Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins in the two main roles.
Wow.
But obviously it did not happen.
Yeah. Can you imagine? In some, what is it? The multiverse somewhere that exists. Yeah, the multiverse. Think about it. Yeah.
As we mentioned earlier, the plot was again remade. The film was again remade in 1998 as You've Got Mail, this time using email instead of letters. I've seen that movie, and you've seen the movie. It absolutely does not hold up candle to the original. I'm pretty sure I don't think I hated it, but I don't think it was very good. I can't remember.
Well, I definitely don't hate it. Yeah, compared to the original, you can't. But I mean, it has its own charm, and of course, it's Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. So. Mm-hmm.
Interesting because much like Margaret Sullivan and Jimmy Stewart, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan also starred in a series of films together, too.
That's right.
And like you mentioned earlier, the bookstore in the movie is called The Shop Around the Corner.
Yep.
The Shop Around the Corner is ranked number 28 on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Passions, or their 100 Greatest Love Stories. And in 1999, it was selected for preservation by the National Film Registry. So overall, a fun Christmas movie. It has really good accolades, and people really seem to enjoy it, and it's a classic now. Any kind of final words on The Shop Around the Corner before we move on?
I mean, we pretty much said everything there is for this. I mean, is this just one of those, I mean, doesn't he have to be Christmas. I mean, it's February and I'm watching it now. And it's just one of those just timeless, like, romantic comedies that just had just the right amount of everything. And you create this amazing viewing experience. And I mean, it's definitely, check it out if you haven't. It's a classic.
Now, where it's available, as you said, it's not streaming for free anywhere, but you can rent it digitally or buy it digitally at your usual online digital retailers, Apple, Amazon, Vudu, all that. I think the lowest price is $7.99 on most of those, and you can rent it for $2.99. Obviously, we are proponents of physical media here. There is a Blu-ray release from Warner Archives. It's the one I have. That's what I would suggest you get, because physical media is always better. And then I do want to talk about a few other things before we close out the show. But before that, I do want to talk about what our next movie will be. And I'm not busting out a random movie generator. I actually did a poll on the Essential Films Facebook page, because I thought that we would be kind of releasing the next episode around Oscar time. And I basically said, I gave people an option of 10 best picture winners and decide which of the 10 we would discuss. And they were as follows. Let me pick up the list here. And of course, I should have had this up before I started talking. Okay, so the list was The Deer Hunter, Dances with Wolves, Forrest Gump, The French Connection, An American in Paris, The Sound of Music, All Quiet on the Western Front, Amadeus, From Here to Eternity, and the original West Side Story. So I'm not going to go through all 10 of the results. I'll give you the top five. In fifth place was Amadeus. In fourth place was The Deer Hunter. Third place was The Sound of Music. Second place was All Quiet on the Western Front. Ooh. And in first place, the movie we'll be discussing on our next episode is From Here to Eternity from 1953.
Oh, now this, I have this not seen that in years.
This is the movie that is supposedly the basis of the Johnny Fontaine character in The Godfather trying to get a war movie, starring in a war movie that the studio won't let him in. And it's supposedly based on Frank Sinatra in From Here to Eternity. Again, it's not, no one is saying that Frank Sinatra did those things, but that is what is.
And got the mob involved and put a horse in the producer's bed.
That is what everyone believes people were referring to Frank Sinatra trying to get into From Here to Eternity.
Hmm.
So that will be our next episode. But before we go, I did kind of want to spend a few minutes talking about two major deaths that we got in the last couple months. First, on January 6th, we lost Peter Bogdanovich. And on February 13th, we lost Ivan Reitman. We don't have time to go into huge full-length episodes like we did for, you know, Sean Connery or Richard Donner. But I just want to spend a few minutes talking about each of these guys who had huge impacts on the business. First, Peter Bogdanovich. You know, obviously, we covered probably his most famous film last year, The Last Picture Show.
Right.
But he's got a big filmography under his belt. He started with Roger Corman. I feel like a lot of people started with Roger Corman, you know, on movies like The Wild Angels and like something about prehistoric women, like Valley of the Prehistoric Women or something like that. And the first time he got to direct was Roger Corman, I think, produced movie called Targets, which is a really great movie if you've ever seen it. And that's kind of what led him to The Last Picture Show.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, what I remember, like, most recent from him is every now and then at Alamo, you know how they do the Don't Talk PSAs? Like, he was in one of them. I think it's probably on YouTube. I might, if I can find it, I'll send it to you. But it's like, he does one of those Don't Talk PSAs before the movie starts. And it's like, oh, look, it's Bogdanovich. That's cool that they got him to do one of these. But yeah, I mean, it's like, what an amazing career this guy's had, you know, starting where he did with Corman, leading up to The Last Picture Show, and then everything else he's done after that, which unfortunately it's like, you know, I know he wanted to do I know Texasville he did, which I have not seen. I don't think I want to see it because I hear it sucks. I mean, I think even you said it wasn't that great. But yeah, this guy has contributed so much to film that, I mean, not just as a director, as a filmmaker, but like, you know, he's, you know, had, you know, he does like shows and conversations with like directors. You know, I think he had a podcast too, if I'm not mistaken. So like he's
he had a podcast with TCM last year or the year before. I can't remember. It was basically kind of like a podcast of his like of his life, basically. I forget what it's called, but you can find it under if you look up TCM podcast, you'll find it.
Yeah, but it's like he's just contributed so much to the medium that, you know, he was one of those guys that like he was like one of the OGs, and you know, at least to me. And he'll be missed.
Yeah. Some of the movies I would recommend from him. What's Up, Doc? From 1972. That is like a screwball comedy with Ryan O'Neal and Barbara Streisand. And I remember, you know, like Barbara Streisand starred in like a lot of, you know, romantic comedies in the 70s. And, you know, when I first knew who Barbara Streisand was and I heard that she was in like a romantic lead, I was like, I was picturing her in like her current state, right? And I was like, really? Barbara Streisand? But if you look back, especially at What's Up, Doc, she's really adorable in that movie. And like when you see that movie, you're like, oh, I get it now. So like she's absolutely adorable in that film, even if she's not necessarily conventionally like beautiful. Like she's just really cute in that movie. It's a great, it's a really funny movie, like a really great romantic comedy. It's along the lines of something like Bringing Up Baby, where it's just two people who aren't necessarily getting along and they're in like this wacky situation and they fall in love, you know?
Yeah.
Paper Moon is the other big one he did with Ryan O'Neal and Tatum O'Neal, his daughter, or I think where Tatum O'Neal won the Best Supporting Actress Award. That's another great film. I would absolutely recommend that. And the one thing that the one thing I remember him doing, I think the first time before I was like full on cinephile, the first time I ever saw him was in The Sopranos as Dr. Malfi's psychiatrist.
That's right.
Because an actor as well. He was an actor as well as a director and a writer. He was an actor, and I remember that. I remember him popping up as a recurring character. He had several like appearances as her psychiatrist. He also apparently appeared in Orson Welles' last movie, The Other Side of the Wind, which I never saw, but he apparently helped finish. Because it was never quite finished, and he helped it finish and get it on Netflix. Right. I think it's on Netflix. And he also, I found this interesting, he won a Grammy for the best music video for directing Running Down a Dream by Tom Petty. So that was interesting.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And apparently there is a movie he made, a documentary he made about Buster Keaton called The Great Buster. I've heard it's an excellent documentary. It's on my to-watch list. I'm not sure when I'll get to it, but yeah, it's on my to-watch list. He was a guy who clearly loved movies. You know, he interviewed, like you said, he interviewed like so many people, like John Ford. He was friends with like Howard Hawks and Hitchcock and Orson Welles. Obviously, like his best work was probably more in the 70s and early 80s, but like he still continued to work throughout his life. Actually, the last time I remember seeing him on screen was in It Chapter 2. Do you remember? And
I think he was
the director of the movie adaptation that the guy was making.
Yes, that's right. I forgot all about that.
Rest in peace, Peter Bogdanovich. Fantastic career. You know, he'll be missed. And then I
just sent you I found the link, the Bogdanovich Don't Talk PSA from Alamo. So when you get a chance, check it out. Awesome. It's pretty funny.
Awesome. I will watch it and also link it in the notes for the show so other people can watch it.
Yeah.
As I said, also, this one hurt a lot. February 13th, we lost Ivan Reitman, who was a pinnacle of my youth. Basically, he made a lot of the movies I would watch as a kid over and over again. I mean, this guy made Meatballs, Stripes, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Twins, Kindergarten Cop. I'm trying to think of what else he made. Those are like the big ones that I can remember off the top of my head. I mean, he and obviously his son, Jason Reitman, went on to become his a very successful director in his own right, most recently directing the sequel to Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's great, great career, man. And he did so many movies that I grew up with that I'll never forget.
I mean, these are movies, too, that like may not be all that great, but I have soft spots for, like Twins, like Kindergarten Cop, like Junior. I know everybody hates Junior. I have a soft spot for Junior. So, but of course, then Meatballs, Stripes, Ghostbusters, like those are the classics that everybody loves. So like this guy was a big part of my childhood as well. So that this is a big loss.
Yeah. And I think Meatballs, I haven't seen it in forever. Like it probably I haven't seen it since the '80s, but it was the movie that kind of put Bill Murray on the map.
Right.
Like, now he'd been on SNL before. But I think this was like his major, I don't want to say it was a big screen debut, cause I'm not sure if it was, but it's like his first big hit after or during SNL. I don't remember if he was still in SNL or not during that time, but he was already a big star with SNL. And then he made this movie. That was his first big hit. And it's, you know, raucous, you know, summer comedy kind of thing, R-rated comedy. Stripes, with him and Murray and Harold Ramis, another kind of one of those like crazy situation movies. And I thought, another really funny one that I grew up with, but of course, the best is Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, one of my favorite movies of all time. I've mentioned many times before, it's one of the movies that taught me English at 5 years old. Mm-hmm. It created something that like is kind of rare in that it's the special effects comedy. Like you don't really see a lot of those anymore. But he kind of like, I'm not saying he invented the genre, but he certainly popularized it with Ghostbusters.
I'm looking through his filmography as well. Let's see. What else has he done? Like, I mean, Father's Day I haven't seen in years. That's the one with Robin Williams, I think, and Billy Crystal. Let's see. 6 Days and Seven Nights. I haven't seen that in years either. He also directed My Super Ex-Girlfriend. I never watched it. I never cared to, but it's like it's one of those like mid-2000s. Like, ugh, okay. But it's like, and then he was producer for like Animal House. He produced Space Jam, the first one. So, I mean, this guy had quite the career.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to go back, going back to what you said about Twins and Kindergarten Cop. Yeah. If you look back, they're not great, but they have heart. You know what I mean? Like, and was Twins the first time Arnold did a comedy?
I think so. I think I so like, I have the Shout Factory Blu-ray that came out, I think, last year, the year before. And I think they mentioned something like that, this was like Arnold was trying to stop. He didn't like being typecast as like the strong, you know, beat everybody up kind of guy. He wanted to kind of try out his acting chops in something like this. So this was like his first venture that wasn't like him shooting everybody up.
Yeah, and it's a fun movie. It's a totally fine movie. It's entertaining. Danny DeVito's in it. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember liking it. I remember seeing it in the theater, as I remember seeing Kindergarten Cop in the theater as well. And again, Kindergarten Cop, another movie where using Arnold's comedic chops, which he has some, you know, and also kind of some of his action chops. And of course that movie gave us the line, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina.
Yeah, right.
And, it's not a tumor. But
it's not the tumor. Shut up. I think, okay. Twins. I'm pretty sure I saw when I was like, wait a minute. When did this come out? It came out 88. I'm pretty sure I saw it like in the early 90s when I was like 5 or 6 years old. It was like a Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock movie. On those, like, you know, the basic TV stations. I remember seeing it the first time. Kindergarten Cop, I don't remember how I saw it the first time. I know I was little when I did. One I do remember seeing in the theater was Junior. Junior I actually did see. Now, did I pay for it? No, of course not. But I don't think anybody, I think we actually snuck into that one. But nonetheless, Junior I actually did see in the theater. And I have not seen it in years. I'm sure it's not gonna hold up. It's probably gonna be cringe when I watch it now, but like I remember just enjoying the hell out of it as a 9-10 year old.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what else he did? He did Dave, which is a fun movie. I haven't seen Dave in a long time.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's one. For those who haven't seen it, it's the one where Kevin Kline is like a doppelganger of the president of the United States who dies, and he has to like take his place as the actual president. Stars Sigourney Weaver as well as the first lady. Really entertaining movie. Really enjoyed that film. But yeah. You know, he did a lot of movies for my child, especially Ghostbusters. And it's kind of fitting that we had Ghostbusters Afterlife come out just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And that movie is all about connecting with your father and you know, sharing a love of the same thing with your father. And that movie itself is clearly a love letter to his dad. And that franchise. So, rest in peace, Ivan Reitman, fantastic career.
Yeah. RIP to Bogdanovich and Reitman. Just, you know, what a career for these guys. What a life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's going to wrap us up unless you have anything else you want to talk about before we go.
You know what? I think we're good for tonight, my friend.
So let's get to some plugs. EssentialFilmsPodcast.com is the website. EssentialFilmsPodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Please like the Essential Films on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Essential Films. Please like, rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever podcast service you're listening to us on right now. And please listen to our other show, Force Perspective, hosted by my man Mark here. Mark, what do you got to say?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at SportsGuy515. You can follow the show on Twitter at FP Movie Podcast. Like I said, the last time we recorded was a couple of weeks ago. We were getting into the nitty-gritty of the Oscar nominations. That episode will be up this weekend. And next episode, which we're going to record within the next few days, we're going to start getting into some of these Best Picture nominees. I think we may do the Dune episode next. I haven't decided yet. I'll probably let you know, Adolfo, probably by tomorrow. And so we can prepare. But I am, like I said at the beginning of the show, I am starting to watch some of these Best Picture nominees and some of these Oscar-nominated films. And actually, I didn't tell you, the last one I watched was Spencer. I wanted to see Kristen Stewart's performance. And yeah, she it's probably the best thing I've ever seen her in. And like we said on Force Perspective, right. like Robert and Kristen, they're good actors. It's just they have that albatross of Twilight they have to like get out of. And I feel like they are. Especially like Kristen Stewart in this performance too, which I don't know if you've seen it yet, but definitely watch it for her. I mean, the movie is whatever, but like it's just it's an actor showcase. And it's really she's the focus of it. And you know, she takes that screen time and she just freaking makes magic with it. So definitely at least just for that performance, check it out.
I definitely will. And you should definitely check out Nightmare Alley, dude.
I will.
So far, my favorite film of 2021. So we'll see. And, you know, and before we go, and we can touch on this when we do Force Perspective, but did you see that article I sent you about how they're cutting out a lot of awards for the ceremony this year for the Oscars? It's what I've always said, though. Like, if that's what they want, if they want to make the show shorter, that's what they got to do. But again, it's that whole thing. Do you want to be a TV show or do you want to be an award ceremony? You got to pick one. Clearly, they're picking they want to be a TV show. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I guess they're getting scared with the ratings over the last few years. And it's like, well, the ratings shouldn't matter. If it's just about the awards and about, you know, honoring, you know, the industry, like who cares about ratings? But it's like that's not how they think right now. So,
yeah. All right, so look for us on Force Perspective coming soon, and then our next episode of Essential Films will be From Here to Eternity. And until next time, please buy physical media.
May I help you, Mr. Kralik?
No, thank you.
Oh, no trouble at all. I put all the imported bags over there on the shelf.
All right.
Is that the way you wanted it?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it. I'd appreciate it if you'd tell me if there's anything wrong.
When have you become so interested in my idea of what's wrong?
Well, Well, I want to please you, Mr. Kralik. After all, I'm working under you.
And you don't have to keep harping on that.
Oh, no, I didn't mean it that way at all, Mr. Kralik. Regardless of what I think of you personally, I believe that anybody who works with you and doesn't get a great deal out of it is just plain dumb.
Just what do you mean, what you think of me personally?
Oh, well, I mean, since you ask, no matter what anybody else says against you, I think you're a gentleman.
Well, try to be.
And, oh, Mr. Kralik, you have no idea what that means to a working girl. What a girl goes through in some shops. Now, take, for instance, when I was with Feldish Brothers and Sons. Well, the sons were all right, but the brothers, Mr. Kralik. And that's why I like it here so much. When you say, Miss Novak, let's go into the stockroom and put some bags on the shelf. Well, you really want to put some bags on the shelf. And that's my idea of a gentleman.
Well, I just don't believe in mixing bags with pleasure.
Mr. Kralik.
Yes, Miss Noble.
About that blouse.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, but I had to.
But I want to thank you. I'm so glad you did it. You know, in the bottom of my heart, after thinking it all over, you're so right. That blouse was awful.
Oh, no, not awful.
Yes,
no,
it was. Of course, I wouldn't admit it at the time, but what woman would? We hate to admit we were wrong. That's why we're so feminine.
Oh, well. This is the first time you've shown a little sense. Quite a change in you, Miss Novak.
I know it, Mr. Kralik.
You just keep this up, and I think we'll be able to get along much better.
Thank you, Mr. Kralik.
Quite all right, Miss Novak.
You know, I was planning to wear that awful blouse tonight. I have a date with...
Tonight? Well, didn't you hear what Mr. Matacek says? We have to stay here and decorate the windows.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Yes.
Would it be possible... Do you think you could spare me tonight? And then maybe Mr. Matacek would let me off.
Well, so that's why I'm a gentleman. That's why you've learned so much from me all of a sudden.
I don't understand, Mr. Kralik.
You want to get the night off?
I have to, Mr. Kralik.
Well, you're out of luck. Oh, that was such an obvious trick. I almost fell for
it,
too.
Please, Mr. Kralik, I have to get off tonight. It's terribly important.
You know, for the last 6 months, you've done everything you could to antagonize me, and now you have nerve enough...
You haven't been very nice to me either. No matter what I do, it's wrong. If I wrap a package, that's not the right way. If I make a suggestion, and some of them are very good, you don't even listen. Everything has to be done just exactly your way, and then you don't like it. When I first came into the shop, I was full of life and enthusiasm. And now I'm nothing. You've taken my personality away. You're a dictator, that's what you are. Well, let me tell you, Mr. Kralik, any day now, I may be in a position where I don't have to work anymore. And then, Mr. Kralik, I'll really tell you what I think of you. And as for that blouse, I think it's beautiful, and I'm going to wear it tonight. Mr. Kralik, I don't like you.
The night of
Oh!